We all have core fears. So tonight we're going to be looking at this exercise. It's called the second step proposition exercise, and some people think it's on the second step. It's the second step proposition is God everything or nothing? And when we look at our lives as God everything or nothing, that's how we can see where we're going to have fear. And this is from Dave Fredrickson. He wrote this. I don't know if he wrote it, but it's on Fellowship of the Spirit. It was in 2001. Him and Mark Houston did a weekend, and he had the PDF on it, and I copied it. And I don't think you can get the PDF anymore. They took it off XA speakers. I don't know why. They took Joe and Charlie off XA speakers, too. But if you can't get Joe and Charlie, you can listen to experiencethebigbook.org. There you go. That was a joke. So we're going to look at the second step proposition exercise. And by the way, the dinner was really great last night. And it was really special for those who didn't come. And we'll do it again next year and try to come. The second step proposition is on fear. And fear is an evil and corroding thread. And fear is what separates us from God. And we're always going to have fear if we're relying on who? Self. And I gave that handout that I got from Joe and Charlie, and I've given it out maybe 1,000 times. But it really has the whole deal, because if I'm in self, then that means when I'm self-centered, I'm centered on what I want in my instincts of life to be fulfilled. And if they're not, if they're threatened in any way, I get angry and I get afraid. And it'll never work when I'm running the show to get what I want in those areas. It has to be God-centered and just playing the role God assigned and then doing the best I can and not having any demands on how these should be met other than how God wants them to be. So less attached to my instincts and trying to fulfill them through playing the role God assigns rather than I assign. And so we're going to read some of this. I'm going to try to cover the first page tonight. We'll spend a couple weeks on it. I've done this many times, and every time I do it, I learn more. And I've done the exercise. I've made the cards. Now it's kind of automatic with me. I know when I'm in fear that I'm managing, I'm choosing myself and not God. So it says, this is a specific spiritual exercise for members of AA interested in attaining a new level in the fourth dimension of existence. Now, what does he mean by that? I was trying to think. There are a lot of ways you can describe the fourth dimension of existence. One of the thoughts I had today, I saw it differently, is the fourth dimension of existence where I'm not bound to me. I'm free from the bondage of what I want and what I think needs to happen, and I'm connected to God's plan. And as long as I'm connected that way, things are going to be okay. Now, we talked about the 10th step last week, and the 10th step is where we're trying to maintain conscious contact with our Creator all day long. Anybody think that's a good idea?
Yes.
Now, of course, we drift away, but the 10th step is how we use the tools on page 84 and 85 to stay in contact with God. And then it tells us the vision we must carry each day is God's will for me in all my activities. How can I best serve Him, not mine? It says, if I do that, and that's the vision I carry, I can use my mind again. Because he says that's the proper use of the will. And the use of the will to get what I want is not the proper use. And so how do we have a closer connection to God? And really this exercise tells us when we're off the beam and how we correct ourselves. And the whole purpose of this exercise, have a new experience. We had an old experience. Anybody like fear? Anybody think it's great? Now, fear can be useful if it makes you take positive actions. We're not talking about fear of snakes or fear of standing on the top of the Empire State Building. We're talking about self-centered fear. But if your fear gives you courage to do something and to walk through it with God, then it can be valuable. But these things block us off from God. Now, when we take the third step, it says we made a decision to have God direct our thinking and life. Anybody think that's a good idea? Great. We all say that, but then unless we find the things that are blocking us from God and face and be rid of them, he can't fulfill that. So you hear at meetings, I took it back or gave it to him. I don't know what those people are talking about. what we do is we make a decision, and then we try to use these spiritual exercises to remove the things that are blocking us all the time. They come up. Selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, fear, that's what the big book says. When these crop up, we do at once. We ask God to remove them. We take the exercises. Steps 4 through 9 are designed to show us where we're, what's blocking us and how to face and be rid of them so that we can be content with ourselves, God, and the world. Anybody think that's a good idea?
Yes.
Good. So in this exercise, we identify the areas of our lives where our ego is still trying to get away with control through self-will, justification, delusion. Now, the problem with this is that when we're in delusion, we can't see it. We can't see that the ego is deluding us. Remember the big delusion it says that I had? This was really true for me. It says the delusion that I could wrest satisfaction and happiness out of managing well. Anybody else have that? That's on page 62. They're talking about ourselves. And I had that delusion that if I managed well, it would work out. Well, it worked out for a time, but then it was never enough. Or I would be afraid it would go away. Or I'd lose it, or they'd find out about something. And so that was a delusion. How do you wrest satisfaction, happiness out of my life today? Being with God, doing His will, staying close to Him, playing the role of signs, trying to stay out of my character defects and practice 6 and 7 all the time. Trying to practice love, patience, tolerance, kindness, compassion, consideration. That's my vision of God's will for me. You can write out your own, but that works for me. It says this exercise should provide each of us with tools and directions to how to get back onto the spiritual beam. Now, why is it good to be on the spiritual beam? What happens if you're off the spiritual beam? You're on your own. And how's that work for you? And when you come here, you don't realize that your problem is not alcohol. Your problem is you're off the spiritual beam. You've been living on self-will, and you've created a mess of your life. And then when you do that, alcohol became a solution. We named our disease after what we used as a solution for it. And so alcohol, did it work? Did it work for anybody? May have worked at the beginning, but did it work at the end? No. And so we had to give up on that plan of life, running the show ourselves so we could have a different plan. Anybody think that's a good idea? Yeah, we all do. But then how do we do it? That's the key. That's what the steps are all about. That's what 10 and 11 is all about. And steps 4 is to find when we're off the beam. So this exercise is going to tell us when we're off the beam. Now, how do you know when you're off the beam? You don't feel good. You're bothered. Something's bothering you. You're irritable, restless, or discontented. You're angry. You could be enraged. That's really off the beam. You can be in a lot of fear. Fear can paralyze alcoholics. And you can be harming other people and feel shame and guilt. We don't want to get all the way off anymore. We want to recognize when it's beginning to crop up, right? So we can face and be rid of it quickly with God's help. It's designed to guide us through the areas of our lives that need the immediate focus of God's love, gives us specific prayers, and provides us a vision for our lives toward which we need to move. And how do you know what areas of your life need immediate focus of God's love? Anything in which you're being bothered today, anything you're afraid of, anything that's causing you unrest. And think about it. Anything bother you today at all? Anybody here have a bother? Fear? Get angry about anything? For me, it was the running plays of the Chiefs off tackle. I said, give it to 27 again. Let's see how that's going to work for us. And Mark helped me out with it. I called him when I'm spiritually off the beam. He got me back on focus, so I'm here tonight. We laugh about those things, but people get off the beam on ball games.
Yeah.
And on page 53-2 of the big book, this is in the chapter to the agnostic. Of course, it wasn't Duke basketball, we understand. That would have been serious. I went to Duke, by the way. And I've learned to suffer through that with God's help, some of the losses. Anyway, page 53-2 of the big book, we're getting off the track tonight. This is the second step proposition. And it says, when we became alcoholics. So when did you become an alcoholic? Do you know when you became an alcoholic? Could it be when you were crushed by a self-imposed crisis you could not postpone or evade? Now, you may have been an alcoholic, but you couldn't avoid it. At one time, you were crushed. Anybody remember when you were crushed at the end?
Yes.
The moment of complete defeat?
Yes.
And it says, at that point, we had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God or everything, or he is nothing. Now, most of us at that moment of complete defeat, I know I got down on my knees and I asked for God's help. Did anybody else do that?
Yes.
And so you all know what we're talking about. But then we chose God was everything because we couldn't fix it. And it says either God is everything or he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What is our choice to be? Now, it doesn't say God can be everything when you want him. You know, when you think you need him, it says God is everything or else he's nothing. It's a proposition. And then what is your choice to be? And Sandy Beach says this is the only choice we really make in Alcoholics Anonymous all day long. Am I choosing me or am I choosing God? If I'm choosing me, then I'm back in self. And then the whole ball game gets all out of sort. So choosing me or God is a thing you do all day long, every moment. Now, how do you know when you're not choosing God? You're fearful, you're angry, you're dishonest, you're self-centered, you're irritated, you're judging, you're bothered. You have emotions that don't feel good. For most of us, and this is really important, the way this is written, we said God is everything. Everybody thinks God is everything, right? Mm-hmm. Now, some people don't. They have trouble with God. And one of the thoughts I had about that is that they don't want to give up that they're really nothing and God is everything. You have to completely surrender yourself and to your plan and follow God's plan. It can't be halfway. And for the alcoholic, and then we go to step three, right? But for the alcoholic, the real alcoholic, this decision has to be made deep down within at the gut level of concession. Now, what they're talking about is that we really have to understand that I can't fix this and I can never be successful running my life on self-will. I wrote the thought on recovery this week on step three. I wrote the first requirement all about that. We have to be convinced that a life run on self-will can never be successful. And so this decision has to be made deep down at the gut level concession. It's the same gut level where we finally had to admit defeat with respect to alcoholism. Now, almost everybody here, I guess, imagine everybody here admitted defeat with regard to alcoholism because they're in AA. And they're here trying to get a solution to that problem. But the real defeat is me running my life. And so a lot of people can't see the second part of the first step, right? Our lives were unmanageable because they left out by me. So when I talk to Bill in heaven, hopefully, I'll say, you should have put by me in there. Because sometimes we'll say, of course, our life's unmanageable, but we can give a list of all the people that made it that way, but it was unmanageable by me. And I like this one speaker says that we die on the hyphen. We just can't accept that my life is unmanageable because of me. And why? Because I'm self-centered and I'm self-will run riot. And I'm trying to wrest satisfaction, happiness out of life by managing well, and I made a mess of everything. Did anybody else do that? Anger, fear, shame, and guilt. Made decisions based on self which harmed me and others. Anybody ever do that? Mm-hmm. It's not a pretty picture. And when you really can see the truth of that, then you really want to have God everything. And it says the real alcoholic is the longest distance in the world can be from the head to the heart. Because we can say it, but do we really feel it? Do we really truly understand it? A mental decision of this magnitude just won't cut it for us. We have to admit this concession at our deepest level for it to offer us humility. Humility, seeking the power, not having power in the amount we require to achieve success with serenity and live a happy, usefully life. What he's saying there is when I fully concede that I can't manage this life, then I'm humbly seeking God's will in all my activities, remember? And they talk about that in step 6 and 7. A man who's seeking true humility is the man who's seeking to live in the way his creator designed him. And so this humility tells us, who wakes up in the morning, the first thing they do is they pray and ask God to direct their thinking, like it says in the big book. Well, that's a surrender that I need God's help. Yeah. The first thing, beginning in the morning, it says on page 86, it says, we think of our plans for the day. Anybody do that? But before we begin, it says what? I have to ask God to direct my thinking, divorcing it from selfish, dishonest, self-seeking motives. If I'm living in selfish, self-seeking, dishonest motives, God's not directing my life. And then I'm back managing my life, and then I'm on my way. So I try to say that in the morning. And then all day long is how I try to see where I'm off the beam and get back on the beam. It's a better way to live than I lived before. And so it says we had to miss this with the humility. Since most of us blow right past the second step proposition, we'll say God is everything, but we really haven't fully conceded it. We hit step three still operating with our minds. Now, how do you know when somebody has taken step three, said the prayer, got down on their knees, and then really didn't take step two at the deepest level in their gut? They don't want to do step four. They don't want to do it. They don't want to do the rest. And so you know when someone is really completely defeated and understands it on their own, they're nothing, they're doing the steps. They're doing it as quickly as possible. They're calling their sponsor, say, what do I do next? I've done this, let's get together. Versus the sponsor nagging them and saying, when are we gonna do this? And so you see a lot of people come in here. Now, on the first day, they're usually very defeated. And he talks about that. And then he says, since we hit step three in our minds, therefore we concede step three in our mind as well, usually only with respect to our drinking. Now, we all want to give up drinking, right? We all want to quit drinking. Anybody not want to quit drinking in here? Suggest we do that. But we agree our mind's eye to have a new director and good God tell us what we should do with respect to alcohol. But you understand, being sober is when the disease is. So you can give drinking to alcohol, you can stay sober, but sober is where you have no relationship with God and you're living on self's will and you have no power not to drink. Because remember, the only power we have to not drink is with our relationship with God. And so we cannot drink and still be running the show, and it cannot be pretty. It could be pretty ugly. And you could stay sober a long time and be miserable in AA. And so the question is, some people don't drink, most do, but some are just miserable. What we want is emotional sobriety. We want to be able to live a contented, happy, peaceful life of service. And so it says, we agree to be God's agent and let him empower us in the works we do, as long as it's with respect to alcohol. Last, we agree that God is going to be our new father. Anybody think that's a good idea? Good. He will provide what we need. And here's the line I always quote, if we keep close to him and perform his work well. So my vision of God's will for me is to keep close to him and do his work well, and then he'll provide what we need. Now, a lot of people misread that you're going to get a new car and a bigger house and a new job. He'll provide what we need spiritually to be able to accept whatever happens, to be able to live life on life's terms, to be able to be okay with circumstances and deal with them in a positive fashion. Like a good father, God will love us unconditionally. He will provide what we need if we get out of line. He will correct us back on track gently. Now, what they mean by that is when you're off the line and you're out of line with God, usually you don't feel good. You're afraid or you're angry or you're discontented. But the problem with alcoholics is God could be, if he doesn't correct us, if he corrects us too gently, we just stay out there. And a lot of times it takes a lot of correction. So sometimes we have to stay away from God a long time in AA to really realize how miserable we've made ourselves to seek him again. It says God will discipline us, but he won't take away our free will. He won't take away our ability to separate from him. But if we turn the corner and turn around and say, God, I want to seek you, he will take us back and very quickly. So here's this is a good paragraph. So with respect to our drinking, our AA life may seem somewhat manageable for a time. You see that all the time. We have surrendered, we have given up, admitted defeat, conceded to our innermost selves that we're powerless, and may have actually stopped trying to run the whole show. You see that a lot. People come in the first week, couple weeks, things are good. Month, 2 months, 3 months, the car, they're back in the house, they got the car, they're back at work, things are going good. But relatively short time, the same alcoholic is now sober, and we talked about what that means, only has, having conceded steps two and three in his mind, can't figure out why he's still having trouble in several other areas of his life. all at the same time. So you have that pink cloud, but eventually that goes away, and then you're left with sober. Somebody said that means, son of a bitch, everything's real. And think about that. And so your life starts to unravel, but you're going to AA and you're sober. How can that happen? Well, because just going to the meetings isn't enough. You need a relationship with your creator. You need to work the steps. That's why after step 3 in the big book, there's a subtle line. It says, remember we thought well before saying this prayer, making sure that we're ready to abandon ourselves completely to God. Now it says, this is a great decision. And at once you're going to feel better. But it won't have any permanent effect. It's the next paragraph, unless at once. Followed by a complete housekeeping, a complete inventory, working the rest of the steps. So they tell you to take the third step and abandon yourself completely, but then they say, now that's not going to do any good if you don't follow through. A decision is just a decision. It just tells you where you want to go with the action. But you have to take the action for the decision to be fulfilled. A lot of people in AA don't understand that. I'm going to meetings, I say the third step prayer, my days are crap. Well, they don't understand that saying the prayer doesn't give you serenity and peace. It just directs you on what you need to do to follow through on that. And so it says, he knows he's missed something. He can't figure out what, nor can he figure out why. You've seen that. We probably all experienced it. I'm sure we all did. The first couple months are pretty tough, aren't they? Things are all different. But the end, and probably that's why when I talked to you yesterday about Dr. Bob and the old timers, they got the guy down on their knees in the hospital on the second day. They went through the defeat very quickly in the steps to try to maintain a relationship with God. They didn't waste any time. Now here it is. The answer for the real alcoholic is simple. So you come to AA, you said the third step prayer, you got a sponsor, you're going to meetings, you love it, you're making coffee. And the answer for the real, but why is your life unraveling? Anybody had that happen to them? Is this just me? The answer is simple. We've missed 2 points. We have only conceded in our mind, and we have left our ego unchecked so it can rebuild. Remember, alcohol is a subtle foe. And the ego tells us things that aren't true. It says, well, you don't need to go 3 meetings a week. You don't need to do the steps. You're not that bad. You don't need to take moral inventory. Has that happened to anybody in this room? See, our ego in check, it can be real. And you see that with new people. One of the good things about working with newcomers is it helps you, who you're working with, to see your own defeat. And just make sure that you're still surrendering, because they'll fight you. The people you're working with, they don't want to do it, and they give you excuses, and you can see how they're not completely defeated. And that's why it says we insist that alcoholics hit bottom in the 12 and 12, and hitting bottom is that moment of complete defeat. It's not circumstances. It's the inner circumstances of complete defeat to the hopelessness of your situation. Remember, it says there are people who can't get this to are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. Anybody ever heard that right at a meeting? Every meeting. Well, what the hell does that mean? It means what they say, and there's a solution, page 25. It means they cannot see the hopelessness and futility of their life as they're living it. They're constitutionally incapable of understanding the real situation that they're in. And the ego can cause you to do that. And when you have that, you can't see your real situation. You're not going to take the action. And that's why very few make it. We talked about it last night. You know, I was thinking when we had that dinner, of all the people I've seen come and go in here, and done this for 10th year, 1,200 of these meetings. I can't tell you how many people I've seen come and go. I've got all these numbers on the phone. And maybe some are fine, some aren't, I don't know. But we don't see them anymore. It's a sobering comment. And then Ed read that thing last night about the guy who was dying alone, that his friend Kate said him, she's a chaplain, and nobody wanted to be with him. He was dying of alcoholism. He's 51. His family didn't want to come and see him anymore. So your ego can, unchecked, it can rebuild. It can rebuild if you're 10 years sober. It can rebuild it 20 years sober. That's why it's a daily plan. It's 10, 11 is constantly looking at where your ego is trying to separate you from God and trying to seek God all the time. Because remember, if you get too far away from God, it's very hard to get back because you can't see it. And the next thing you know, you're in the liquor store. You say, well, how'd that happen? Now, you don't go to buy a bottle of vodka and say, by the way, I'm getting this drink because I'm self-centered, I'm separated from God, I'm living in fear, I'm full of shame and guilt, I'm harming everybody, I've made terrible decisions, get me a bottle. It just doesn't happen. We can't see it, right? And so, but that's really what really happens. We can't live sober. So he says, let's take a look. First, where does the book tell us the problem of the real alcoholic resides? Well, it's the main problem centers in the mind. Anybody agree with that? So how can you think your way out of this? And it says at certain times you cannot recall the humiliation and defeat of the last drink. You're without defense against the first drink. That's why knowledge is good, but knowledge of won't help me. What do I need knowledge of? God. See, I'm an agnostic when I'm without knowledge of God. I have no relationship with God. The cure for our alcoholism is knowledge of God and a relationship with Him, to be awakened that there's a power in your life that you can go to. And it can't be you. So conceding only the mind doesn't work because as alcoholics, we are masters of delusion. Anybody a master of delusion? Anybody sober, take a drink again. Think about it. If you're sober, you said you're going to quit, and you swore you're going to quit, and then the next day you're drinking. How can that happen? It's a delusion. Why? Because your mind, right before you drink, won't tell you there's anything wrong with it. You only think of what it's going to do for you, not to you. So conceding only the mind doesn't work. The big book says they cannot, after time, differentiate the true from the false. As alcoholics, we lie to ourselves better than anyone, and unfortunately, we believe our own lies. You know, I think if we would write down all the things that we think and actually look at them on paper, we could see how ridiculous they are. But when they're still in the mind, we can't see that. Second, our history book tells us of the dangers of the alcohol ego and how it rebuilds if left unchecked. Henry Thibault, he was a famous physician. He went to AA in the 1939, as soon as in Manhattan, right after the big book started. He wanted to see what they were doing because he had no way of helping alcoholics. He's a very famous psychiatrist. And he wrote, the so-called typical alcoholic is a narcissistic, egocentric core. Well, what the hell does that mean? It means you're a self-centered asshole. And all you think is about yourself. Now, I hope that's right. I don't know. It's on the tape. If you don't like it, I'm sorry. Sometimes you just can't see it. Narcissistic ego, that means we're all we think about. And listen, it's dominated by feelings of omnipotence. What does that mean? It means that we are the magnificent ones. I'm Michael the Magnificent. Why should I have to wait in line at the food store? Why should I have to deal with these people? Why should I have to, right? And we can't see it. And in fact, we could be omnipotent and completely insecure within the same 10 seconds. And so that's why it says we're egomaniacs with an inferiority complex, and it's really true. And it can be at the same time. People who aren't alcoholics don't understand that. We want to maintain this core, its inner integrity. That means that we don't want to give up on ourselves. We don't want to give up on our way. Inwardly, the alcoholic brooks no control from man or God. That's why a lot of people have trouble with God, because really what all it means is you're giving up on you. Because all we say is a power greater than ourselves. And then we define God in AA as that which has all power. And so a lot of people just don't want to give up on themselves. He, the alcoholic, must be the master of his destiny. He will fight to the end to preserve that position. People will die. People will die. They don't want to give up on themselves. If the alcoholic can truly accept the presence of a power greater than himself, truly accept it, he, by that very step, modifies at least temporarily and possibly permanently his deepest inner structure. And what he means by that is, if I want to admit that there's a power greater than me, for the alcoholic, that's the beginning of giving up on self-centeredness. That's the beginning. It's a big step for an alcoholic. And why do we be willing to admit that? Because we're completely defeated in step one. And they say in the big book, then are we willing to admit or are we willing to believe that there's a power greater than self? He says, as soon as we do that, he says, we're on our way. And that's the cornerstone of the foundation of the Arch to Freedom. Just willing to give up on yourself for an alcoholic is a lot. And then the rest of the steps are how you follow through on that. It says, by that very step, modifies at least temporarily and possibly permanently his deepest inner structure. this narcissistic, egocentric core. He's willing to give up on that. And remember why he does that, because we're completely defeated. I really like what Sandy Beach says, why do people do the AA plan when they come in here? Because they finally realize there's no other plan. They have no other choice. I think that's true for all of us. When there's no other choice, we're completely defeated, we come and we choose this. It says, he is no longer typically alcoholic because he's beginning to admit that there's a power greater than himself. That's a big deal for us. We don't see the importance a lot on step two. We trivialize by saying, I can, he can, I'll let him. That's kind of trivializing it. It's a very powerful step. And the strange thing is that the alcoholic can sustain that inner feeling of acceptance that he needs a power greater than himself and he can't be it. He can and remain sober for the rest of his life. A religious or spiritual awakening, here's how he defined it, is the act of giving up on one's reliance on one's omnipotence. I really like that. I had noticed it before. I'd probably done the study 10 or 15 times, but I see the significance of that. If our spiritual awakening, we talk about we want to have a spiritual awakening, so the result of the step is we give up on one's reliance on ourselves and we rely on God. And the thing is, at step 12, we know that there's a God because he's worked in our lives. Why? He's doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. Anybody heard that promise, Red?
Yes.
And so that's how you know. You know when you get to step 12 and the spiritual awakening. So you can give up your reliance on God, on yourself, because you know God's there if you need him. And if you do the actions. The defined individual no longer defies, but accepts help, guidance, and control from the outside. It can be AA. It can be your sponsor. It can be it's help from outside you. And then it can be the book, and it can be the steps, and then it becomes God. It can start out with other people, like Joe was saying, but then eventually it has to become the dependence, the relationship with God. And the individual relinquishes his negative, aggressive feelings towards himself and towards life. He finds himself overwhelmed by strongly positive ones, such as love, friendliness, peacefulness, and pervading contentment, which state is the actual antithesis of the former restless and irritability. So what he's saying here is that when we change and we accept help, we change the way we see the life and the world, we feel better. We're not dominated by the negative feelings from being self-centered when we're God-centered. And then we want to stay that way. So step 10 is when you feel good, you're okay, and then you recognize when you're not, and then you take these actions to get back. It says, all members of Alcoholics Anonymous who succeed in remaining dry sooner or later undergo the same change in personality. And here's what it is. I must lose this narcissistic element permanently. Now, how do you lose it permanently? You lose it every day with daily surrender, right? You use it constantly through prayer, meditation, remember? Continue to inventory. Seek improved conscious contact through prayer and meditation so we get the power and the knowledge of his will, not mine. So the steps are all designed to do this, regardless of his final conception of that power. Unless the individual attains in the course of time a sense of the reality and nearness of God, or the greater power, his egocentric nature will reassert itself and drinking will again enter the picture. This is why it says we have a daily reprieve. Anybody remember that in the big book? Daily reprieve based on the maintenance of our fit spiritual condition. Fifth spiritual condition means that you're not in your egocentric nature. So I think this page has really meant a lot to me. I went a little bit longer today. We'll pick up with this next week. So if you can, please bring this back. Congratulations again to the two birthdays. Again, great job at the dinner. And I'll open it up now. Welcome, and I hope you come back.